You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
This is where Wisconsin wakes up. It's Daybreak with Brian Noonan and Jamie Martinson. Here are your hosts, Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. It is 6 minutes after six now. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. It's Monday, and I am still Brian Noonan. Glad you're here. A lot of fun. Hopefully, you had a more relaxing weekend than our own Jamie, who, like most of us on Friday, we kicked back. We kicked off our weekend and enjoyed maybe a few hours of respite. Jamie threw herself right in the middle of a breaking news event.
I didn't throw myself into the middle of anything. I was just trying to enjoy some Chick-fil-A, and all of a sudden there was some sort of event happening across the road at another restaurant here in Madison. So my husband, being the person that he is, who really loves to cover news, we made our way over there, staying out of the way of what was happening. But huge police presence, and some stories broke over the weekend that apparently there was a suspicious vehicle, somebody trying to flee. So Madison police made sure that they handled that and got it all wrapped up quickly. But response time for the Madison Police Department, I don't know when the initial call went out, but from the time we were sitting in our drive-thru until we saw the 30, 40 police vehicles over there, it was incredibly fast. So kudos to them for always being so good at their jobs, I guess.
I have to ask, do you guys have matching fedoras with press stuck in the brim
No.
that you have in the back seat? You just pull out, you know, grab your little notebooks and start
Honestly, I was enjoying my meal. My husband was much more enthralled in the whole thing. I was enjoying my meal and just watching the police presence around us and the comings and the goings. But, you know, it was Friday night. I was done. I'd pretty much checked out of the news. So
by Friday night, it's like, I'll see you.
That's right. I'll let somebody else tell me what happened over here. But you had a great weekend, though. I know you
had a little excursion. For Christmas, part of the, you know, we're old, my wife and I, and we've there's only so much stuff you can accumulate over your life.
Yeah.
Parker, you'll realize this. So you start trying to find experiences. So I had gotten her a couple nights at this historic inn on Lake Michigan up in wine country, and we were going to go to a couple wineries, and the weather was perfect. We ended up going to a number of breweries and then some wineries and a distillery, and so it was a very fun weekend. Yeah, and this building, the inn was built in like the 1890s
Cool.
So it had kind of a rustic cabin charm to it. It was nice to get away. The best part of it, though, and we both agreed on this, to not have to get up.
Right.
We slept till 9 o'clock, Jamie.
Yeah. Oh.
Like we're teenagers, like we're bums. We're just layabouts. But we didn't have to worry about the dogs.
My
cousin's daughter was here taking care of the dogs. We didn't have to. It was great. So just being able to. Well, what time do you want to set the alarm? And then because, you know, we had a couple beers, we went to bed, I think, at 9 or 10.
Right?
So we get like 12 hours of sleep. It was unbelievable.
Oh, that was the best that's part. Amazing.
I'm impressed.
That's amazing.
I know.
Whenever you get rid of those dogs for even a couple of days, right? Like the schedule loosens up so much.
And there was nothing to do. What do we get? We don't have to do laundry. We don't have to go grocery shopping.
Love it.
The wineries don't open till noon.
Oh, perfect. So, perfect. You know, well, that sounds like a great weekend.
Well, so both of us tried to block out the news, but it kept happening, and now our job is to get back into it. And so let's do that. We'll start with some headlines coming out of Iran. The IEA, which for, if you don't know, the International Energy Agency, warned today that the energy crisis was worse than the oil shocks in the 70s. Oh, man. And if you're old enough to remember the footage of gas station lines and shortages. Well, Iran has vowed to vowed retaliation if U.S. President Trump followed through on his Saturday threat to attack its power plants in the Strait of Hormuz, was not reopened within 48 hours. So we'll see how much.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know how gas is doing where everybody else is at. On my way in this morning, I noticed it was anywhere between $3.69 a gallon all the way to $3.99 a gallon, just depending on where you were at and what gas station. So keep that in mind as you head to the pumps. Also in headlines, Iran warned it would deploy mines around the entire Persian Gulf if its coasts or islands are attacked, according to state media reports earlier this morning.
Great. The number of people reported killed in Iran and Lebanon since the start of the conflict is now in the thousands. Attacks across the region continued Monday morning with Iranian state media reporting strikes in Tehran. Saudi Arabia said it intercepted two ballistic missiles headed toward the capital of Riyadh.
And finally, Iran's defense council has threatened to deploy mines to block the entire Persian Gulf if Iran's coasts or islands are attacked, according to state media. They said this morning the only way to pass through the Strait of Hormuz for non-belligerent countries is coordination with Iran. That was according to the statement from the high-level security body.
Oh. Well, there was news happening here, too, and a lot of it, well, none of it good,
no,
quite frankly. We'll start with this. This happened right after the show on Friday, but it's been discussed all weekend. Robert Mueller, the former FBI director who led the historic probe into alleged collusion between Donald Trump's 2016 campaign and the Russian government, has died. He was 81. A statement said, "With deep sadness, we are sharing the news that Bob passed away last night." That was from his family. His family asked for their privacy rather be respected. Slow down, Brian. His family announced last August that he was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease in 2021.
Now, as you can imagine, President Trump kept it very classy with the passing of Robert Mueller. He reacted with a post on Truth Social that said, quote, "Robert Mueller just died. Good. I'm glad he's dead. He can no longer hurt innocent people. President Donald J. Trump."
Yeah. And we talked about this. It's like, how much attention do we want to give to that?
Yeah.
None, really. That's the attention we'll get. There's nothing to say about it. There's no defense of it, even though, man, the Treasury Secretary and some other people were bending over backwards yesterday trying to distance themselves. But that is that. Classy as always. Well, the president also said that ICE is going to head to U.S. airports today. Yes, they're on their way, especially to Atlanta. He put Border Czar Tom Homan in charge of the effort. Homan was on CNN's State of the Union yesterday. He said that agents would be there to release Transportation Security Administration officers from quote-unquote non-significant roles. But then, as is custom with this administration, some differing views, because Secretary of Transportation Sean Duffy, former lumberjack, offered a seemingly conflicting plan with a broader role for ICE agents. He said that, they are trained for X-ray machines and things, unlike the, because they're law enforcement, and just like TSA is law enforcement. And Homan had said, well, no, we're there to not do the skilled stuff. So who knows? Once again, Jamie, this is exciting. An operation with no clear blueprint on how it's supposed to go.
Well, by this point, we should all be very used to that. And we're going to talk more about it as the morning wears on. But in further headlines to wrap things up, there are a few signs that this impasse over funding for DHS is going to break soon on Capitol Hill, at least before the end of the week, which is the next payday for those TSA workers who still remain with the agency. And of course, that's ahead of another scheduled recess for Congress.
And New York's LaGuardia Airport is closed after an Air Canada plane collided with a fire truck while landing last night. The pilot and co-pilot were killed. Two people in the truck were injured. That according to law enforcement. And not good. And our final headline, Jamie.
Yes, absolutely. Looking at images coming out of LaGuardia this morning, and
rough.
That is not great, not great. So we'll keep an eye on that as the morning progresses. It was an interesting weekend because it turns out that if your Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, sometimes you have to escalate to de-escalate things, Brian, when it comes to what's happening in
that's
the Middle East.
That's what I heard, and I'm
Yeah.
I'm wondering why he's the one who's getting trotted out all the time now.
Well, he's the only one that hasn't really put a foot in the mouth quite yet. And he does at least according probably to the president would be my guess. And when you trot him out onto the TV and onto all of these interviews, he's a very mild-mannered guy, right? And he sticks to the actual script. It doesn't matter what the anchor is actually asking him. He is not going to delve into other lanes. He is going to stick exactly to the script. And, this weekend when he said that, you have to escalate to de-escalate, the things don't have to be mutually exclusive, this is what he had to say. This is cut one.
Every day, we are taking out their missiles, their missile systems, and the factories that build those missiles. And now, General Kane, Secretary Hegseth, are leading a campaign to destroy all the fortifications along the Straits of Hormuz.
So this kind of sounds like every other story that we've had. We're going to destroy everything. We're winning this war. When is it going to end? Oh, we have to escalate to de-escalate is essentially how that
goes. And then we also have to
ease
some sanctions on the country we started a war with. I don't understand any of it.
No.
But yeah, there's a part of me that understands that escalate to de-escalate phrase. It sounds stupid, but if you want to win, sometimes you got to amp up the effort. You got to really push it in to hit that point where then things will start going downhill. So you have to go uphill for a little bit, and that means escalating the attacks. And I'm not talking about this war. We shouldn't be there anyway. But in general, you've got to do that. You've got to crank things up, and usually retreat or surrender follows a giant attack.
Mm-hmm.
And so the escalate to de-escalate, I understand. I don't know why this Treasury Secretary is delivering this message rather than someone in the Defense Department or Marco Rubio or somebody like that. But that part I get. I just don't think this is the way to do it because we don't have a plan anyway.
There is no plan. And so far, the United States has been able to avoid directly hitting Iran's oil infrastructure, but is now saying that that could change because the president has suggested that more strikes are possible. He's also discussed securing key oil sites in the Middle East. Officials are even considering sending U.S. troops now to secure particular locations, which is central to Iran's oil production. At the same time, as you mentioned, Bessent is out there saying that they're going to ease some sanctions to allow the Iranian oil stuck at sea to be sold, aiming to stabilize all of the global energy markets. Maybe that's why he was trotted out this weekend, because, the money, the markets, Treasury, put them all together and you have some weird linear thinking from this administration. I don't know.
Well, it would be some thinking that, okay. No, that all right, I get it. It's still not a good look.
No.
It's if you're talking about, I don't want my accountant talking about obliterating another country. I want somebody who actually knows what it is. I don't want Bob from accounts receivable going, yes, well, we've decided we're blowing everything up.
And yet he still might be the most qualified. We don't know. I mean, out of everybody in the administration, he still might
have
the most qualifications.
Qualified for this? I mean, he may be very qualified for Treasury Secretary.
Is he? I mean, you have to at some point start wondering who's qualified for what in this particular administration.
Nobody.
It is 6:19 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And if you thought, Brian, it's been a couple days, why isn't Wisconsin getting involved in another lawsuit? Hang on. We've got good news for you. We'll get to that after this on the City.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Wisconsin wakes up here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us on the Civic Media Network. It is 6:22 right now. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. As you know, Josh Call is very big on joining into lawsuits against the administration, and we being Wisconsin, have done it again. Josh Call is leading Wisconsin in a multi-state lawsuit against the U.S. EPA, challenging its repeal of the 2009 endangerment finding. The lawsuit was filed on the 19th, so last Thursday, and in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. So 23 states in this one, Jamie.
Yes.
Josh Call, he does get involved in all of these suits. He's like, listen, we're going after all these injustices for Wisconsin, and we're going to get it done.
I mean, and he's been leading in some cases along with other democratically led states. And this one, I think this one's a big one because, you know, if you like clean air, if you like to drink clean water, and, you know, you like stability in the environment.
Come on, hippies.
I mean, you know, like agriculture, tourism, outdoor recreation, then I feel like this is probably an important one to be, you know, involved in, which they all have been. You know, but really when these protections go away, it raises concerns about the long-term health and economic impact of all across the country, including here at home. So I'm all for being involved in some of these lawsuits, especially when it's combated some of the efforts of this Trump administration to roll back really important laws or really important things that we've already had on the books that have really helped and protect people. Now, the repealed endangerment finding has identified six greenhouse gases, if you're not familiar with this, including carbon dioxide and methane, that's harmful to human health. And the finding provided the legal basis for regulating emissions from vehicles, power plants, and the oil and gas sector. And the repeal actually removes the foundation for many of those federal climate regulations. And this was a repeal that took place in mid-February of this year and immediately ended federal regulation of those greenhouse gas emissions from vehicles. And the agency at the time also signaled plans to roll back regulations that affected other major emitters, like, you know, power plants.
Right. Well, we knew this was coming,
yes.
Right? This was part of the campaign. Too much regulation, too much stifling of business. We're going to let business basically do what they want, and the health and of not only the people but the planet be damned. We're going to let them do what they're going to do.
Yeah, you know, and here's the thing that is. It's always interesting to me when this administration repeals things like this, right? Because at a basic level, why is clean, breathable air controversial? That feels like something that we should totally be able to agree on, no matter what side of the aisle that you are, you represent, you vote on, whatever. And I also think this is about the kind of environment that we're going to leave behind, whether or not you agree on climate change. That's, I guess, up to your personal beliefs. But we're obviously seeing.
This is another thing. No. Let's stop. Let's stop placating people who believe fallacies. There is definite scientific proof that there has been a change in the climate. Don't come at us with, well, it was pretty warm in February. Does that mean the whole, or it got really cold in March. What happened to the planet warming? Shut up. There's a difference between weather and climate.
There is.
And if you're not going to, I'm done.
Right.
There's no more placating. This is a no placating zone.
Okay.
We're
all
not
right.
going, if you have, for me at least, you could placate till the cows come home. I've had it with people. We've given everybody with an opinion a chance, and they've failed miserably. So sometimes, I'm sorry, your beliefs and your opinions are wrong, and they get no quarter here. We will call them out.
And that's just
yes,
it.
Go ahead.
No, you're good. So, I mean, but that's just it. We do see stronger storms. We do see the changing of the seasons. There's impact on farming. There's impact on our water systems.
You're a weather chaser. You guys know the climate.
Oh,
this is not,
yeah.
This is science.
It is. I mean, when you look at the fact that Tornado Alley has shifted into the Dixie Alley area, it's shifted out of that Kansas, Oklahoma area of the country, and it has shifted all the way east into like your Arkansas, your Louisianas, because that is where you're getting the most impactful storms, Mississippi. There's a shift. Clean energy, though, isn't just an environmental issue. This is an economic one, because investing in cleaner technologies can create jobs, it can support new industries, it can help build a healthier future for Wisconsin. So I don't know why you'd be opposed to all of those things. I don't understand why this
because
administration...
Because it's not cost-effective for the people who have the president's ear. It's all... Follow the money. That's the answer for everything. Real quick, some breaking news, Jamie, from the Associated Press. President Trump has extended the deadline to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. He says the U.S. will wait 5 days to strike power plants. This is classic. I'm the tough guy, blah, blah, blah. All right, I'll give you a couple more days. That's all, 5 days. I'm benevolent, so take your 5 days.
You know,
and then in 5 days, it'll be pushed back another 5 days.
It will. And he got some accolades from NATO this weekend when they were given the option to basically say that he had taken things too far. They negated on that. And they were like, no, you know, it's okay. They had no...
Talk about a no-placating zone. Stop it, NATO.
They had, you know, they asked... He was asked specifically, the NATO president, whether or not he agreed with the comments that Trump made about... allies, and he placated completely to the president of the United States.
Well, guess what? We're going to have time to placate dear leader again, unless somebody has a backbone and stands up to him, because we'll talk about this on the other side of the news. There is another push against mail-in ballots, and it has gotten to the Supreme Court. So we will talk about that and so much more. And don't forget, Jamie, it's another day for our
break
into spring, whatever it is. It's a text to win contest, multi-state. You can win $200 today and qualify for a huge prize.
That's right.
So your word will come after 7 o'clock. A lot to get to this morning on Daybreak.
So get your Civic Media app ready so you're ready to text in and potentially win. It is 6:29 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan, and this is the Civic Media Network.
Want to join in on the conversation? Call or text 855-75-CIVIC. Now back to Brian and Jamie.
6:35 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. If you're in Appleton and Oshkosh listening on WISS or in Eau Claire listening on 93.5 The Tap, or even in La Crosse on WLCX, thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate it. Hopefully your Monday is off to a great start. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Glad you are with us. You know, the administration has been walking around nationalizing the elections, and they always look to absentee ballots, and then they say undocumented people are voting too much. Mail-in ballots are a huge thing. Well, today it's going to be even bigger because the Supreme Court's hearing a case today that could reshape how mail-in ballots are handled nationwide, especially ahead of these midterms where things are not looking very promising if you are a Republican. This is where things could change. So Watson versus the Republican National Committee is the case. It centers on whether states can count absentee ballots that arrive after Election Day as long as they were mailed on time. That's why we tell you, send your mail-in ballots early. There's been a big push for that now. Get in there early. We know the postmarking has changed. We know that locations for postmarks have changed. So you want to get your ballot in and make sure it arrives prior to Election Day. But this is going to be interesting to see how the Supreme Court plays this.
Yes, because essentially at the root of this, Brian, is how we interpret federal election laws, which obviously sets a single election day, and whether that means ballots must be received by that day or just be sent by that particular day. So a lot of states already have like a grace period for mail-in ballots. Mm-hmm. And some accept ballots days or even weeks after Election Day if they're postmarked on time. And obviously we know that during COVID, mail-in voting surged. And while it's declined, it still makes up nearly 30% of ballots cast, at least it did in the 2024 election. Now, Republicans, including the Republican National Committee, as well as the president, argue that ballots arriving after Election Day should not count because extended deadlines can create uncertainty and also reduce confidence in election results. No, They only... No.
Well,
let's stop there. Let's stop there. They only show some sort of interference or with the election results if you don't win. That's the only time that we see any sort of interference in the election results when it comes
Why
to the mail-in ballots.
Why would I question a result where I won, Jamie? That would be silly. That would just be that'd be downright silly.
Yes. And I think this is going to be interesting to see what the Supreme Court does with this particular case, because obviously, under the Constitution, states have the power to run their own elections, which means Correct. Each state can decide things like deadlines for those mail-in ballots, whether to allow grace periods, and how to actually count the votes, because that flexibility is part of what's built into the Constitution. We have a lot of constitutionalists on the Supreme Court. Now, whether or not that they will placate's kind of been the word so far of the morning, whether they will placate to the president in this particular case and adhere to the Constitution, or whether they decide that we're going to uphold the actual values of what's been written in words, well, I guess that is to be determined, and we shall see.
My only changes to this, and I would urge all states to implement this, you know, they send out the ballots very early.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're like me, it goes in the pile with the mail and you go, oh, I got to get to my ballot pretty soon. And then you forget about it. And all of a sudden it's like, I think they should make mail-in balloting a little more urgent, where you get the ballots will be mailed on this date. They have a must be returned by date.
Yes.
That would make sure that anything postmarked after that, you know, it's not going to be counted because we told you it was printed big on the envelope when it got here. Deadline for voting. Now, if you pull it out of your pile and it's past that date, you know, okay, well, I have to either go drop this off at the polling place or I have to go vote in person. So it doesn't negate your ability to vote. It's just if we're worried for whatever reason about mail-in ballots, mm-hmm. and I don't have a problem with them, and I don't have a problem with grace periods. But if that is an issue, states could. It's a very simple fix.
Right.
Here's the deadline. Must be just like if you're entering the publisher's clearinghouse. Must be postmarked by this date.
We take that more seriously than our ballots when they show up at our house, which says a lot about how we treat voting in this country as well.
Because some people, even if they're going to mail in, I know I've fallen victim to this where I'm like, well, I don't know yet. I'm still trying to decide. And I'm still, well, if that's the case, and that's, you should be very focused on who you're going to vote for, make it an informed decision. But then you got to take your ballot in or you have to show up. I think the mail-in voting was mostly originally designed for service members.
Yes.
It was designed for people in college or living, being away from the country for a while. And it also helps with senior citizens and people who are less mobile. Okay, now it's become a convenience for a lot of other people. Well, that convenience comes with some guidelines.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't see a problem with that, but they have to be instituted state by state. I don't want the federal government taking any role in the elections.
Yeah, that would be step one of trying to nationalize under this particular administration. Now, Democrats and voting rights activists are arguing that any sort of stricter deadline, it doesn't actually change the outcome. It doesn't, especially if ballots are coming closer to the start of the race. They say that ballots that are mailed on time should count and voters should not be penalized for postal delays beyond their control, which is the other big argument right now. We're trying really hard to make mail-in voting harder. We're trying to get these stricter deadlines, potentially, depending on what happens with the Supreme Court case. The mail system right now is not easy to navigate in this country, right?
No.
Things are moving substantially slower than they have in a really long time, maybe by design, depending on how you want to look at it, maybe because there's a lack of workers, maybe because there's a lack of funding. At any rate, it is moving substantially slower. And these Democrats and voting rights activists emphasize that there's going to be impact. You mentioned the groups, Brian, military members, overseas voters, rural residents, and older Americans who rely heavily on this mail-in voting system right now.
But there has to be a little personal responsibility.
Of course.
Too. If I drop my ballot in the mail the day before election day, yes, it's postmarked. It's postmarked prior to the election. But do you really think it's the post office? It's not Star Trek. Nobody's getting beamed up. Your ballot isn't suddenly going to materialize right in the box. You got to use your head, folks.
Yes.
Because sometimes as much as we like to give over responsibility, because it's a lot easier to have other people do stuff for us, we have to take that responsibility ourselves and say, all right, I waited too long. And do something else. Figure it out.
Right.
Now, should there be some sort of deferment for overseas military service? Yes, they should. I think they always had a grace period, and that should continue. If you're serving your country overseas, you can't count on the mail there.
Right.
If I drop it in the box on base and I'm in Afghanistan, how do I even think it's going to get to, you know, Superior, Wisconsin ever? But it does.
It does.
And you're like, okay, but it's going to take a little while.
Yeah, Mark from Prairie du Sac chiming in this morning saying that the postmark thing still troubles him. He says, growing up in far northern Wisconsin, our local post office is what was stamped on letters sent South Range. He says, now I think they got postmarked in Minneapolis. Letters should get stamped the day they are picked up or the day after. And I don't disagree with that. I think it just depends on what's happening at the post office right now. Again, there's a lack of funding. There's a lack of workers. So I think that's going to be a major impact.
They are saying that you can stand at the counter and
yes.
ask them to postmark it in front of you, but still that doesn't mean it's going to get there.
But it might sit in a bin for a
day.
While. I mean, you know,
yeah.
because there's still processes and procedures that they have to go through and timing issues that they work through at your local post office as well. If you want to chime in on the conversation this morning, 1-855-752-4842. That's 1-855-CIVIC. Now, you know, what I think is interesting is when we look at Wisconsin as a whole, we've seen this mail-in voting debate play out here. Central Count in Milwaukee always gets a bad rap. As far as mail-in, how they process things. But this is a normal part of our election systems, and there are safeguards in place to verify the ballots and protect against fraud, because there's a lot of people that are like, oh, it just leads to more fraud. Let's be clear, less than 1% of ballots, there's less than 1% of fraud in any sort of elections, let alone the mail-in voting. Study after study has shown that, and this becomes a political issue when election outcomes are disputed, like by our current president. Not because the system itself has suddenly stopped working. And I think in Wisconsin, it raises a really interesting question, because not only has mail-in ballots been a point of contention, but also our drop boxes here, which are another mm-hmm. way of getting those ballots to where they need to be
exactly.
In a very convenient method. And it got to the point where, if everybody remembers the rules from 2024, basically, each precinct is able to determine if they're going to use drop boxes or not, which now makes it completely
yeah.
hard to navigate the system, because you're making phone calls. And I get it. It's a phone call. But you have to determine if your area is one that uses these drop boxes, if they'll accept them through that means, what your cutoff is on there. So it all gets muddied, let alone the mail-in stuff. I mean, it's muddied. And there's a reason that they're doing it that way. There's a reason that the Republicans want this process muddied, because it makes it harder to vote. It takes out several people who would normally, vote this way. And it hopefully, I think in their thinking, make sure that we don't count those ballots in any way, shape, or form.
Well, and that's why you'll hear, we are making it harder. So you go, oh, well, why don't we just go back to where everybody has to go? Well, we know that then disenfranchises a lot of different voters. It also makes it harder, so our turnout is lower. And if you're in power, that's great. If you're the party that wants to keep control and you don't have as many people voting, there's a good chance you're going to stay in power. But now, holy cow, everybody can vote? That doesn't seem right. Yes, that is right. And you're going to have to deal with it, and you're going to have to win straight up.
Right.
No shenanigans.
I mean, it's really about limiting participation. That's what this is about. That's why we continue to have this debate. And that's why the president continues to bring up the 2020 election that he lost, because it was in the middle of COVID. He didn't actually think people were going to vote. And he didn't actually think that the mail-in ballots were going to be as popular as they were. And here's a newsflash. There are some states that actually just do this on the regular. Colorado is one of them. Colorado and Oregon, you don't actually go stand in any sort of line on any election day. Everybody gets a mail-in ballot. They've been doing this for years quite successfully. And newsflash, there's not been any fraud reported in those states.
There's no... again, I will not entertain or placate to people who say the election was fraudulent. There's no evidence. There's no evidence there was ever any great amount of fraud. You can nitpick and find one thing. We talked about one ballot in Madison. You can find mistakes.
Of course.
But stop.
There's still human error involved.
Here's a conundrum,
right? Yeah.
Yes. Here's a little conundrum, Jamie. We got to free up some hospital beds, right?
Yes, we do.
In Wisconsin. Sure we do. But and we're going to move everybody into old folks' homes, assisted living, things like that. That'll solve everything. Will it?
Probably not. No.
That's probably not.
No.
All right. Well, we'll have to get to the bottom of it after this, because that's a proposal. That's a bill that's being thought about in the legislature. And we'll see.
It is. That, and don't forget, another chance for you to enter our Break Into Spring Text to Win contest coming up after 7 o'clock this morning. It's 6:48 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And this is the Civic.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
6:52 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan, and you are always welcome to chime in at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Everybody's laughing because they know I'm going to say, even if you think I'm not supposed to be here, you're welcome to chime in. We'd love to have you. And don't forget, if you don't have the Civic Media app yet, really, what are you doing? But download it now. It's free because it's 7 o'clock. We're going to give you the newest word in our Text Into Spring contest. It's a multi-state, it's Break Into Spring, but I like to say Text Into Spring because that's what you're doing. You're texting. It's a multi-state contest. Jamie, the prizes are phenomenal.
They are. You have a chance to win a daily cash prize of $200. So all this week, you're going to have that opportunity, or you can qualify for our grand prize, which is a queen mattress set courtesy of Verlo. That is a prize package worth over $1,300. We'll give you more details in just a few minutes, but get your Civic Media app ready if you don't already have it so that you can text in and hopefully qualify for both of those prizes. And hey, while you're, you know, dabbling online, make sure you like us over on Facebook and Instagram. We have our own show page now, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie. So we'd love for you to give us a follow and, you know, see all of the things that we're up to. I don't know. I was ogling puppies this morning. So I heard producer Frank tell me that there's a chance I could get to sit with puppies at some time. That was all I heard. I don't know if it's a promise, but that's what I heard. And so
that would be a fun show.
That's when I quit listening.
Get all the puppies in there. Yeah, because our focus would really, there'd be a lot of hard-hitting political talk when we're surrounded by puppies. All you'd hear is, stop, not in here.
That's all it'd be for three straight hours.
But maybe that's the right radio station for
right?
some people.
Be like watching the Puppy Bowl is essentially what it'd be.
And you love the Puppy Bowl.
I do love a good Puppy Bowl.
Puppy Bowl is fun.
I do.
Puppy Bowl is fun. You know what's not fun, Jamie? Being in the hospital and then having to transfer. And that was the worst ham-handed segue ever. But I know Frank was watching his watch going, hey, let's go pick it up. Get to the story. Well, a bill passed by the Wisconsin legislature is heading to the governor. It's expected to be signed into law. The bill would make it easier for hospitals to discharge patients who cannot make medical decisions and do not have someone legally assigned to act for them. Now, right now, those patients often stay in the hospital for weeks or months, but now they would be moved to assisted living or nursing homes, those kind of facilities, which sounds great for the hospitals, but disability groups are starting to worry. It's like, well, if there's no beds in the hospital, where are the beds going to be in the other facilities?
Well, and this is what I keep thinking about. When we've talked about this story collectively as a show and as a group, and that's the first thing that where my mind went is, We already know that in this state, we have several hospitals and areas that are devoid of a lot of great medical care, right? People drive a really long distance. That also extends to our long-term facilities like our nursing homes, right? Which is essentially where these people would end up, where these patients would end up. Because we're already at a vast shortage of beds. We're already at a shortage of staff. I don't understand how this actually solves any sort of problem at all.
It doesn't. It's shifting. It's borrowing from Peter to pay Paul. All right, I don't have beds here. Well, there's a bed here. Well, now I don't have beds here. So where are the people from facility A can't now fit into facility B because we took too many people from facility A. So then is there a facility C? That's where the focus needs to be. Okay. And, well, it would take money to build some sort of bigger facility, a number of facilities to house, and house sounds very cold, but that's basically you're moving people to somewhere where there's room for them if they don't have anybody else to help them out.
Alicia chiming in over on our social media feeds this morning saying that it sounds almost the same level of the VA deciding to take custody of homeless veterans and putting them into institutions. Yes, I agree. Yeah. But here, I think this takes another level at some point, too, because the other place that my mind goes to this feels less like a patient care decision and more like a financial one, because hospitals are expensive, right? Long stays cost a ton of money. Insurance companies don't want to keep paying for the hospital beds if a patient doesn't technically need that level of care anymore. So I guess the easier option then would be to move patients out faster, even if the next step isn't actually ideal, or it doesn't actually make sense from the standpoint of room. I mean, like, there's no room at the inn in some of these cases, right?
And in a lot of long-term care or even short rehab centers, we had to go through that with my mom, where they're like, okay, she had gone into the hospital, she was ready to move into rehab before she went home, and trying to find a bed in a halfway decent facility was very, very difficult. Now, and that's in a city. So once you get out of the city into our rural areas, your choices are very limited. And then because those choices are limited, goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway, the number of beds is limited.
Right. And at the end of the day, that none of these options sound great for patients, right? Because staying in a hospital too long isn't good. Being moved into an already stretched nursing home system without any strong oversight isn't really reassuring either if I'm that patient or if I'm that person's guardian or that family. And none of this seems like it's great. There's no really great option. And it also lends to a bigger question about our medical system, right? Because obviously this is a direct indication of where our medical system in this country is, and especially in your rural areas, that if these are your two options, none of these are good options.
Yeah, and they're, you know, the disability groups are saying it gives family members more power, but not the patient themselves, that they don't have any say in where they're going, what they're doing. It's just send them on their way.
It's 6:59 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. You are listening to Daybreak. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. New text to Windward coming up after the news and more headlines and stuff you need to know right here on Pacific.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.